Hello, welcome to Crying with Karen. This is your co-host, Sarah. Karen is not with us today. She is currently attending her cat's funeral. Rest in peace, Fluffy. So today I'm joined with my mother. Her name is Kelly. Say hi.
Hi.
And we're going to discuss some good life topics because I feel like this time we should talk about things that cause happy tears instead of sad tears. So we'll get right into it. We're going to be discussing three topics today, and those three topics are evil, happiness, and love. Okay, so let's get right into it. So first we're going to talk about evil. So what are your feelings about evil? Do you think it exists? What is it? How is it expressed? Just any general emotions about that topic.
I think of the word evil, I think of wicked. And one of the expressions is, you know, wicked this may come. Mm-hmm. I do believe that there is evil. I think people can have a nasty side to them, so I would classify that as evil.
Okay. So one thing that we were really delving into when it comes to literature, we were reading Othello. I don't know if you're familiar with Othello.
Very little.
Okay, that's fine. So there's a character called Iago, and he's kind of seen as the archetype for evil because he does nothing violent himself, but he kind of manipulates people into doing things that are evil. For example, he makes the main character Othello. He convinces him that his wife or lover cheated on him, and then Othello ends up killing her with his bare hands. And he basically manipulates people like tools. So a lot of people would consider him an evil character because of that. But there is a lot of argument as to whether that's actually something that's evil. Do you think someone can be evil or commit evil deeds without doing anything themselves?
So your question is, can people be evil without being manipulated to be evil?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think people are born with general evilness. There are some people in the world that that's just who they are.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that the manipulator who convinces people
to be evil,
to do things, do you think that itself is evil?
I think that person is more or less a gamer to see how far they can push an individual. I don't think they necessarily have to be evil to have them do evil, to have another person do evil things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think just based on life experiences and also, you know, my major versus what your major would have been,
sure,
we would have different opinions about that. So maybe a more current example where we have a lot of conflict as to what we would determine to be evil would be the Atlanta shootings that occurred for the, I believe it was 8 people. I believe 6 of them were,
sure,
of Asian descent.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure what the specific ethnicity was, but I do know they were Asian.
Asian descent, yes.
So there's a lot of people who state, oh, that wasn't evil. It could have been mental illness. It could have been, essentially, there's people that say it could be anything but racism because they don't want to say it's racism.
Sure.
So just, I know you read the news and you saw everything on CNN. So just based on what happened, like, what do you think happened and what do you think caused it?
Obviously, I don't know all the facts of the case, mm-hmm, but given the news and how they outlined things that they found, I think that the individual intended to do what he did. I'm not sure why he targeted that focus group. I really don't know. You know, they were saying it was more of a sexual type issue. And then I think anybody who really doesn't know why someone committed a crime, they're always saying that it's due to mental illness. So I think people hang a lot of stigma on mental illness, whether it's mental illness or not. To me, it's kind of a scapegoat.
We are talking about that as well. We were saying that mental illness is kind of a scapegoat. And you mentioned that the way the media frames it, it seems like it was a very sexual act.
Right.
And we are talking about how there are different types of racism. So when you think of the classic racism for black men and black women, it's they're aggressive, they're beast-like, they're inhumane. But when you think of, in contrast, the racism toward Asians, it's more of a exotic beauty sexual fantasy kind of thing, or that they're intelligent, these kind of different stigmas. Mm-hmm. So do you think that, I mean, you don't have to agree with me, but do you think that even though they say it's like a sexual act, that could just be because the race itself was sexualized?
When I think of Asian people as to how I remember them growing up and how they were depicted to me, and obviously as I grew older, that opinion varies to changes. You think of the women, geisha, where they, you know, put on the paint and the beautiful faces and the kimono, and they were very small and petite. And so for some people, it was very different from what they were used to. Obviously, Americans, are they don't look like that at all. So it could have a sexual connotation. So men were attracted to something that was different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously now that I'm older, I don't think that it's, you know, I don't think that it was meant to be a sexual thing. But, you know, if you think about even old karate movies, you had Asian women bathing men. And so that was a stigma. That was something that was considered normal. So
yeah, I never thought about that. That's, I remember certain movies like that too. So mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very interesting. And they're considered more petite.
So yes, that goes, well, that's why, that I said the American women are not petite by any way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
We have access to a lot more things than they do, and I think our women's rights are a little more liberal than the Asian women's rights were in their own country.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of Asian Americans are afraid to speak up when things happen to them for that reason, because they think, oh, I can get deported, or I don't have the same rights in this country that other American women would.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that might also...
Interesting that you say that. So on CNN the other night, they had an Asian commentator for CNN, and she was talking about the specific incident that happened in Atlanta. And she said that she was on a subway somewhere, and some man had grabbed her and started, you know, harassing her, saying, you know, this is why things happen the way that they happen, because you are who you are. And so she said, now if she's in a room or a crowded room and someone touches her just to talk to her, it's like she has PTSD, because that really scared her mm-hmm. to her core. So, you know, her population did this, and so on and so on. So very interesting.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense as well.
Yeah.
So going back more toward the core of evil and kind of just distancing from that specific example, I have very interesting opinions about evil, which we won't get into, but do you think that a person themselves, like their personality, can be evil, or do you think evil is more of an action? Like, you're not evil unless you do something that would identify you as evil. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, and I'll use my diagnosis as an example, cancer. I think that every human being is born with cancer. I think it takes something to trigger the cancer to come into its form. I think the same thing with good and evil. I think everyone's born with it. It's just something that is a trigger for it to come out.
Wow. Yeah. We haven't thought about that before. That's very interesting. I'll have to delve on that some more. So I think when I think about it, I have to kind of separate what I think is considered the animal, the id part of the human condition, mm-hmm. so like our primal instincts, and how that is different than something meant to be evil. Because
mm-hmm.
if you're just trying to satisfy your animalistic needs, like lust or aggression, fight or flight, that kind of thing, does that necessarily make those actions evil, or is that something else? Is it intent mm-hmm. that makes it evil?
Sure.
Okay. I'll have to wrestle with that some more.
But think about it this way. So people who have children, if something happened to that child and it was something that, you know, they were kidnapped and they were killed,
mm-hmm.
and that mother or father found out who did it, and, you know, they attempted to take that other person's life, say coming out of the courtroom or something, same scenario. Were they born evil? Was the parent born evil? No. What triggered the evilness? The loss of their child.
Mm. Yeah, that does make sense. So, it's very introspective, but when we kind of think of these big life concepts,
mm-hmm.
we kind of try to self-reflect and think about things that might have influenced our behavior. Opinions. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, even our opinions about a subject. So when sure. I think of me, a lot of my opinions about it have to do with the fact that I want to work with populations that would be considered like the seventh layer of hell. So people that others would consider evil individuals and do evil actions, things like that. So I feel like my perception of what that concept is kind of manipulated like that. And I haven't had any experiences where I think I have been faced with evil.
Well, think about I can't have that. Your life. So life experience versus book experience. Street smarts versus book smarts. So that's exactly what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. So I feel like as people get older, there's a lot of research that says when people get older, they get more conservative in their mindsets. Do you think that, you know, perceptions of evil and those type of opinions related to law, that general field gets changes as you get older? Or do you think your opinions have changed as you've gotten older?
I think my opinions have mellowed since I've gotten older because I've become more knowledgeable.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't say that for everybody. I think everyone has a different take on life and what's happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Okay. It's very interesting. I keep thinking back to your cancer analogy because that's like, it keeps going through my head
because
mm-hmm. It's a very powerful image. It's not something I've thought about before.
It is.
So it's not like the cancer itself is evil.
No.
So when I'm relating that to the evil, like the evil argument.
Right.
I'm trying to see how that fits into it.
Mm-hmm.
So would you say, like using that analogy, it's not the person that's evil, it's the actions that have been done to that person? Or is it the evil that is being caused?
I think it's like something that triggered action
mm-hmm.
or life scenario to make them do whatever it is that they can do. It's the same thing if we were to say happiness.
Mm-hmm.
Someone might not generally be a happy person. They just live their lives day to day, but they win the lottery. Well, do you think that that's going to make them a happy person? Probably so, because it's going to change their life.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, and that's a good gateway into happiness.
Yeah.
So we can start talking about that more. That example actually leads to an example that I was thinking of. We read an article in class where there was a professor who studied happiness, like literally his entire academic career was studying happiness, what that means, how that affects people's lives, things like that. The same professor committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like this whole life, he was so busy studying it, it's almost like he couldn't live it.
Right.
And he had a lot of family issues and things like that, too. So mm-hmm. it's almost like you can't take things at face value. Because his whole life was happiness.
Right.
But that doesn't mean happiness
really?
Was happening to him.
So it kind of goes back to what I had said about being book smart versus street smart.
Mm-hmm.
So he was book smart happy, but he wasn't street smart happy.
Right. Yeah. And when we think about happiness in general, we tend to think about the emotion, like we feel happy.
Mm-hmm.
But Aristotle, in so many words, his opinion about happiness is that it's almost like a journey, like it's an end goal.
Mm-hmm.
It like you want to be happy for the sake of being happy, not for some other goal down the line.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like a set of actions you're taking to reach
right.
happiness.
And one of the things that when we started talking about doing the podcast, I had to like take notes because, you know, happiness is such a interesting concept. And so what I had taken down in notes is I said, in my opinion, happy people view things differently than unhappy people. They're more positive and solution focused. They look at things in terms of gain rather than loss. And more importantly, they have a distinct set of different habits. The small things that happy people people do day to day are subtly different than what unhappy people do day to day. So, you know, when you wake up in the morning, is it something that you're going to say, okay, well, I'm going to be happy today or I'm going to be unhappy today? I don't feel that way. I think that as the day progresses, that's, you know, what happens. You know, same thing with my diagnosis. I choose not to be negative. I choose to be positive because I think that will lead me to a better outcome.
Yeah. And kind of relating to that, you know, if you think of it as this journey toward happiness, do you think while you're alive that at one point you can actually reach that end goal state, or do you think your entire life is the journey up to that point? I think it depends on how you look at it.
Well, and I guess what your definition of happiness is leads you up to that. I don't think there's a journey to happiness unless you truly are a very unhappy person. I think people create their own misery and therefore they will never be happy, because I do think there's people out there like that. And I have a friend who, you know, I think everything bad happens to her because of actions that she takes to, you know.
I'm talking about Kathy. I'm
talking about Gail.
Oof. Yeah.
You know, for me, I don't feel like happiness is a journey. I think I'm a happy person, and so things that I do or say daily help me fulfill that happiness in my life.
And one big aspect that I kind of can't wrap my head around completely, like I don't completely agree with it, is that there's this, it was someone who was discussing how he read Aristotle's work. So it was an interpretation. He said that he interpreted it as there are certain environmental factors or external factors in someone's life that can affect their likeliness of being happy. I think an example that someone had talked about is an abusive childhood. So that would affect, in the long run, you being able to be happy, or the amount of happiness, what type of happiness. Do you think?
No, I disagree with that. And the example I'll give is, we'll talk about eating habits, for example. I think, you know, as a child, you're taught there's different food groups and these are the things that you should eat, and this is good, healthy living, and this is not, and these are good choices and these are bad. I think you get to be a certain age, and I'll say 18, where you don't have that influence anymore. You know what, if you were given the right foundation, you know what's good and what's not. So you know what healthy choices are and you know what's not. So in my opinion, you're an adult now, so you're now creating your own path. You can keep what your parents gave you and throw the rest to the wind. So I think that's on that individual going forward.
Yeah.
You know, you can have people that are always going to have opinion that you're making good or bad choices, but they're your choices now.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons I kind of wrestle with this concept, because I kind of think of your upbringing versus my upbringing. Like, that's kind of why I can't really accept that, because, not to go into specifics, but in my upbringing, it was, you know, relatively normal childhood, middle-class family, loving parents, all of that. But you had a different childhood than I do. You weren't middle class. And then smaller home. And you had to work your way to get through college and all that. Which I work, but not to the same extent where you had to do that. And you had to provide for yourself at that level. So I feel like even though we had very different upbringings in that regard, that doesn't affect our end goal or our chances to achieve happiness in the long run.
Agreed.
Okay. Interesting. So, do you think that, is there anything relating to happiness that you, like, because I'm your child, do you think I'm doing incorrectly? Or I should change?
I wouldn't say you're doing it incorrectly. I think the thing that you need to work on as an adult is you need to be happy with who you are. And I don't think that you've gotten there yet.
Do you think you've reached that?
Personally?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. That's hopeful. I can see that, like, oh, down the line. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So you think that happiness has more to do with internal perspectives than external perspectives?
I do. But same thing. If someone handed me, you know, $1 million,
mm-hmm.
would I say that would influence my happiness? Slightly. Mm-hmm. I don't think money can buy you happiness, but mm-hmm. I think that it certainly helps, you know, pay off your bills so that you don't have to worry about, you know, having that monthly payment. And so, you know, you have a little more financial stability.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't, you know.
Yeah. That was always an interesting phrase to me because, you know, people's usual comment about it is like, I might not be happier, but I can, you know, cry into a couple $100 bills instead of sitting in this rotting house crying.
Unfortunately, you know, that's the American way. We all have, you know, loans on our homes and loans on our cars. And, you know, we don't have tons of money that we can just throw at things and, you know.
Yeah. And speaking of like that Western standpoint, do you think our Western materialism is kind of holding us back from like
it's you know, we've never been a family of keeping up with the Joneses, but there are so many people that have that, you know, the neighbor just bought a new car, so we're gonna buy a new car, mm-hmm. or you know, they just had their lawn done, so we have to have our lawn done, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing.
And that doesn't make you happier, it just kind of stresses you out.
You're just
more
keeping up with everyone else in society. Mm-hmm.
That's why I think the term keeping up with the Kardashians is interesting. Because you're not going to be keeping up with them.
We did the Joneses because that was like a normal mm-hmm. a normal name, or the Smiths. Yeah. Or,
and that's the thing with reality TV, since I brought that up. That's my little tangent because I hate reality TV. It's not reality. Like, that is the most contradictory title ever. Whose reality is that? It's not even their reality.
Yeah.
So I don't really know. It's not like we even want that life, so why are we so focused on watching it? Like, The Bachelor, for example. You would really be okay letting some guy kiss, like, 15 other women and then choose you?
No. But that's not my reality, so.
Right. That's not their reality either. That's not something
they usually be with. Look how many people watch it on a weekly basis, and it's been on for however mm-hmm. many seasons.
Right. Know. But that's what I'm saying. Like, the watchers of the show mm-hmm. wouldn't even want to be in that position. But
don't you think that's more of a fantasy thing? Like, the watchers fantasize about being that girl at the end who gets the rose.
Mm. That reminds me of Disney, too.
It's a fantasy.
That reminds me of Disney, too. Because then you're being raised to think that someone's going to save you, but really you have to end up saving yourself.
Yeah, in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Mm, that's a whole other rabbit hole. Wow.
Yep.
Especially when it comes to self-esteem, because if no one's there to save you, you think that you're just not worth saving, instead of thinking, oh, that wasn't mm-hmm. that wasn't the goal. Anyway, right.
That's just like the child that, you know, their parents are very loving and very supportive and tell them they can, you know, take the world. And then you have another child whose parents always say, you're ugly, you're never going to amount to nothing. And so after a while, that person starts believing that they're nothing and they're never going to amount to anything. So where is their self-esteem to want to do better? You know, where you have the other child who thinks, okay, I'm going to make it. I have the support that I need. And, you know, my parents gave me what I needed. So I'm going to keep on trucking.
Yeah. If you think of the quintessential stereotype about the three kids, the youngest, the middle child, and the older mm-hmm. child, that kind of comes to mind to me too, because there's this, I see it all the time on social media, where the older child, it says, you know, I was alive before the rules were here. The middle child is, I'm the reason we have rules. And the youngest child is, the rules don't apply to me.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of reminds me of that. I mean, should there even be a difference between the three children as to how they're raised or how you view your children?
And it depends on the parents, too. I mean, you have, we have a scenario where, you know, my brother has three children, and mm-hmm. we can see that. So by the time the rules got to PJ, it was like they were too busy with the other two, you know, getting into college and, you know, doing well in school, that PJ just got to do whatever he wanted to because, you know, their focus had changed.
And using that example, I think Megan, she's as the oldest, I think she's the quintessential, like, archetype of the oldest child. She correct. Went to college. She did very well.
Yeah.
Married well. I think she has three kids of her own now.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew did not finish college, I don't believe.
Maybe 2 years.
2 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. But he's still doing fine. PJ took longer, but he's doing okay now, and he had his own.
challenges.
I would argue that those were not specifically just because of how he was raised, though. There was other external factors.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Played a part, for sure. I'm not arguing it doesn't, but I think there were other factors at play. Yeah.
But if the attention was the same as it was on the first child, it would have not gotten to the point that it had.
Right. And because he was a boy.
And because he was a boy and there wasn't as much oversight as if it was a girl.
Yeah. I guess we're already moving into, like, love because we're talking about parenting styles. But do you think, in regard to that, do you think how we think of love is kind of influenced by our prescribed gender? Like, boys think of, or men think of love very differently than women do, and they're given love differently from their parents.
I don't really have an answer for that, because obviously I'm a woman, I'm a girl, so I know that we as females are more emotional about things. So, and, you know, men years ago, their upbringing was not to show emotion. So if love is considered an emotion, then it is different. It is separate. I would say in how you were brought up, it's not that way at all.
Well, I'm an only child.
So. I know. I'm just saying, like, your dad's a very loving and caring and getting emotional.
Yeah. So I would say that he was not raised, as I would agree with, he was not raised in what I would consider a toxic masculine environment, where men are, you know, you can't cry, that's feminine, or you're given a set of values, like, oh, well, as you get older, you need to be doing masculine things, you need to play sports, you shouldn't get into
art. But, you know, as he grew up, his dad wasn't really there. His dad worked to support the family, so the you know, his mom stayed at home. So,
well, grandma also
she didn't work until later on, until the kids were older. So she went back to school to become a teacher. But by that point in time, dad had already matured, and I would think that emotionally he was where he needed to be.
Yeah.
So he didn't have the typical, you know, father scenario, because he was out making a living to support for the family, so.
Right.
And I think, honestly, some religious factors tie into that, too. You know, you always hear, if you're going to marry, you're best to marry a Jewish boy, because emotionally and, you know, how they were raised was the right way. It's a family-oriented thing.
So. You're saying that Jewish families say you need to marry a Jewish boy, or are you saying all families?
All families.
That's interesting. I never heard that.
Raised, as you know, Christian, and then I converted to Judaism. And even in my sect, religious sect, as growing up, it was always said if you can find a Jewish boy, marry a Jewish boy. Now, obviously, that wasn't what my intent was. It just happened to work out that way. And because I was married before, there's a total night and day concept of that, like you were talking about, that lovingness, the caringness, it's very different.
That's interesting. I didn't know that those characteristics at one point, I don't know if they still are, but at one point were attributed to Jewish men.
Yeah, because Jewish families, if you think about them traditionally, they're very traditional. You know, they all go to synagogue on the same day, and it doesn't matter where you are in the country or the world, they're all saying the same thing in the, you know, in the Torah. So there is tradition, and it's tied to family, and, you know, so I can't say the same about every other faith.
Yeah, and I can see that, because when I went to Israel, the family dynamic was a lot different. Yeah. Not necessarily from here, but from other American
Of course.
Families. I mean, the kids, as I can see in the group chat too, the kids are always at their parents' house with their wives, or with Eton, so Daniela's husband, and the kids. They usually see each other maybe 3 or 4 days a week. They're very involved. There is no private life in the family. There's just the family life.
Right.
So thinking about it from that perspective, that I can see that. That's very interesting. So that's familial love. So going into regular love, I guess I should start with a really, like, cliche question. So do you think, I already know your answer, but do you think that love at first sight exists?
I do. Seriously?
I really do. Yeah. I think
after your experience.
I really do. I think that there is a time in someone's life that is a probability. Because you've never really had that yet.
You didn't love dad at first sight.
The true feeling. No, I'm not saying it doesn't. That's not the question you asked.
Oh, that's true. That is accurate.
You asked if I believed in love at first sight. Okay. I do believe.
Yes. But you don't think it's the end all be all?
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
You think it can happen, but it's not something that happens to everybody.
Yes, like tripping over Josh Jamal's boot in an airport. That was love at first sight. Stop.
You were already married. We can't do this again. I would agree. That would probably happen to me. Yeah, because this is like out of context for the podcast, but you hated dad.
I did.
When you first met him.
I did.
Like, deeply hated him.
Well, I didn't hate him as a person. I hated the fact that he treated people disrespectfully. Because, I think that people deserve respect. I'm not even going to go into that whole scenario. But the environment that we met was a very fast-paced doctor's office, and people were waiting for hours to see the physician, and then when they got to see the physician, it was just a few minutes, and then dad was considered a PA at that point. And because there were so many people waiting, he couldn't spend enough time with all those people. And so, you know, making a person wait an hour and a half to speak to them for 10 minutes and then they would come up to me as office manager and complain, you know, it didn't put a good spin on that individual as a person. Like, you need to spend more time with these people.
So you were actually more frustrated with the system, but it came out as, oh, it's this person.
Well, because, yes, they would come out and say, well, Dr. Baker said, da, 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 you know. Mm-hmm. So, of course, you're going to believe the patients, because why are they going to lie?
Yeah.
So. Yeah. And I have to be honest, you know, he at that point in his career had a certain arrogance to him, which I did not like. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, that went away. Well, really.
Quickly.
I wish I had a whip sound on my phone. and just, like, to clarify, how many years have you been married now?
Since 1997.
So, I can't math. This will be 24. Yeah, because it was 20 when I graduated high school, yes. Mm-hmm. So there is credibility to what is being said. I know we started off the podcast saying you hated him, but now you've hated him for longer now, but in a different way.
Depends on the day.
Yeah. So I guess for me, like I said, we've been reading a lot of Shakespeare for class. So there's these two plays that we kind of attribute love to. The one is obviously Romeo and Juliet, and then the other one, it's not as popular. I can't remember the name of it now.
Not talking about Othello.
I'll think of it. No, I'll look it up in a second. But essentially, there's a character named Rosalind, who we'll get into. But starting with Romeo and Juliet, if you think about the type of love that shows. So, you know, they meet at first sight. You could argue that they love each other at first sight. And then they end up, you know, getting married after, like, a day or something. Because they're so in love with each other. And they get married in secret. And then they take their own lives to be with each other. Well, that's because
their families had such animosity towards one another over something I don't think anybody truly even knows. It's like the Hatfield and the McCoys. The same kind of.
But for me, the question is, can you even call that love? Because to me, that entire play is about lust. I think
I agree with that
quickly.
Yeah.
And in that it was like a short spurt.
I think it was
passion.
More of a like a teasing kind of thing, and then it was very lustful.
Yeah. Cuz I think love takes time. Like, even if you say you can feel in love at first sight, I think that's a feeling of love, but you're not in love with the person. So I feel like developing your love.
So you're separating the emotion.
Yeah, I would think so. Mm-hmm. So if that play's about lust, this other play is going to kill me until I remember what it's called. There's a character named Rosalind who...
You can look it up while you're talking.
I don't want to do it on the computer because I'm afraid that it'll mess up.
What is it? Shakespeare?
Yeah, look up Shakespeare Rosalind.
Okay.
But there's a character named Rosalind who is deeply in love with this guy named Orlando. And she pretends to be a boy for all sorts of reasons. She dresses up as a boy, and apparently this guy also likes her, wants to marry her. So she decides to, as a male, train him as to how to be the perfect husband, lover, man in love, whatever you want to call it.
As you like it?
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. The play As You Like It. And I would argue that I don't think that's love either. I feel like if you have to train somebody to be the person you want them to be, you're not already loving who they are.
Okay, so it says that she disguises herself as a shepherd mm-hmm. named Ganymede?
Sure. I don't know how to say it either.
But they said that she's a heroine and a protagonist. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay.
So, I don't know. I feel like, is that love either? Because you're essentially training them how to be who you want them to be and not who they already are.
Think about a marriage, though. I mean, over time, you know, you marry the person that you fell in love with, but as you grow old together, you're both kind of changing, right? Because you're living with one another. So isn't that kind of the same thing?
Well, I feel like before you get married, it's more about falling in love with the person they are, but then you grow together. So you're both changing together.
That's what I said.
Yeah, to essentially accomplish a common mm-hmm. goal or be better for each other. But before you're married, it's, I feel like if you're training this person, then they're not actually the person you want them to be to start off with.
Right. Agreed.
So I don't know. For example, there's a part of the play where he was late for something. And she was like, you can't marry Rosalind if you're going to be late. She's not going to tolerate you being late. Blah, blah, blah. Get used to this. I won't come anymore if you... Mm-hmm. So I feel like that... There's a difference between wanting someone to have good manners, but actually, like, attempting to completely mold the person into a new.
Yeah. You can't teach an old dog new tricks.
Yeah.
It's true. I married one.
You married an old dog?
He was 40 when we got married.
Yeah.
He was already set in his ways, so. I mean, there were some things, obviously, that.
I would argue not.
I would say there are some things that he has changed.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, I don't think he had that type of upbringing either mm-hmm. that, you know, we brought you up in. So, yeah. A little bit different.
And just knowing him, I would say that having you in his life has, like, changed who he is and how he looks at things. His world is very much centered around you in a positive way. So I feel like that's something different. Like, that's something you should go for. Like, that's something you should look for in a relationship, but I think that's different than manipulation in that regard. So I don't know.
So you don't think I manipulated your dad?
Oh, I definitely do, but positive manipulation.
Wow.
Positive manipulation. I feel like women in general, is it manipulation or is it just subtle training?
I would say subtle training.
It reminds me of My Big Fat Greek Wedding, where mm-hmm. she said, the man is the head of the house, but mm-hmm. the woman is the neck, and she can turn the head any way she
That's
wants.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like that dynamic is different.
Mm-hmm. Just like know. Uncle Hal used to say, I'm the captain of my ship, but I have my wife's permission to say so.
Yeah. I think Dr. Carol would agree with you on that as well. Just based on conversation. Do you think that you and Dad having a different religious upbringing ever... I know you converted, but before that, do you think that ever caused any, you know, tension when it came to the relationship or just your personal thinking?
No, I think... And my personal thought was his faith at that point was much stronger than mine. And if we were going to have children, it was very important that we were of the same faith, because I think as a family unit, you have so many challenges anyways. Religion really shouldn't be one of them. Mm-hmm. Not a lot, obviously, there's a lot of people that make it work, and then it's the child gets to a certain age and they can pick whatever religion they want, or they do both. Or for me, that was not a struggle that I was willing to or the road I was willing to go down.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you kind of have to pick and choose your battles. And for me, it was easy. I always challenged my faith growing up. So
yeah, I was about to say, like, just from past conversations, you weren't set in Catholicism.
No. I felt like I was, when I went to church, there was just someone standing up there telling me what their opinion was on certain things that were written in the Bible. So
they were essentially telling you what you need to believe.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And as I know, you don't like that.
No, I if you're going to tell me something, I need basis and backup for what it is that you're telling me.
Mm-hmm.
And you can convince me otherwise, but I need to have that information
mm-hmm.
to make my own decision.
Mm-hmm. And I think as, like, a wrap-up for this section, I'm sure you're dying to answer this question. Is there any advice or, I don't know, anything you would want to tell me about my future love life? Or, like,
what I'm doing wrong? Your future love life?
Yeah.
What are you doing wrong? Yes, you need to put yourself out there. You know, you're so focused on, which is a good thing, you're so focused on where you want to be with your schooling and your career, and but you're not leaving any room for any fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what you need to do.
Mm-hmm. So I just need to go out more.
Well, I mean, obviously we're in a pandemic, so right. we can't do that. But I think because you're so bright, I think probably when people meet you, they're very challenged to, like, have that level of conversation to know that they fit into your world.
Mm.
So you just need to be better about that.
So you think it's the intellect? I always thought it was my physique.
No, I don't think it's your physique. I think physique-wise, like I had said before, you need to love who you are,
mm-hmm.
your self-esteem. I don't think you're quite there yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, when you're not approachable because you don't look around you, you're just focused on, you know, looking at the ground and getting to your next class rather than paying attention to who's around you and who wants to nod at you and say hello. And so you're always thinking ahead.
So I'm like too busy thinking ahead that I don't pay attention to the present.
Correct.
That's fair. Is fair. Actually, I had a conversation about that with my psych advisor because he said a lot of grad schools take people like that look so far ahead that they don't see what's happening, but that's also
mm-hmm.
a fault. So, yeah, I guess I should work on that. Probably not right now because I'll be moving soon. But
yeah, I mean, obviously, you have to find inner happiness, and mm-hmm. I don't know if you're quite there yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't think physique or you know, you living where you live has anything to do with that. I think it's something, inner peace, I guess.
Yeah, I think for me, it wasn't necessarily me thinking that, like, my weight or something like that was the issue. I think it's more like I'm tall for a woman. I'm almost 5'10", if I haven't reached 5'10", because I have been having growing pains lately. And I have a resting bitch face, which Rebecca also does.
Well,
so I feel like those are both things that kind of head people off. I think
the
resting bitch face
has to do with the fact that you're not paying attention to what's going on around you. If someone is facing you and you have eye-to-eye contact and they smile at you, you're not going to smile back. It's like that's a normal thing. You're going to smile, you're going to nod, or you're going to say hi or something, but you don't even get to that point. You're already blown past that person.
Yeah, I think I'm so in my head every time I walk.
Yeah, so.
Just like, get out of my head. That makes sense.
Out of your space.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Okay, so I guess as a final question for the podcast, in terms of anything we talked about or just anything about what makes a good life, what you think would help me attain a good life further down, like anything you want to talk about, is there any advice that, or not even just for me, even like for other people in my class, do you think we should know?
I think every person is different, and what they want to obtain or perceive as a good life is going to be different. I would just say be happy with who you are, and if you have goals that you want to set up for yourself, try and achieve those goals. And I'm not saying financial goals. I'm just saying, you know, you might want to save some money and next week go out to dinner. It could be as simple as that. So don't, you know, don't be unhappy with every decision you make. Because, mm-hmm. you know, we learn from our mistakes.
So essentially, try to meet small goals that would make you feel
accomplished.
And yes. that way, it kind of...
For me, making my bed in the morning, every morning, is something that makes me feel accomplished to start my day.
Gotcha. That's a good example. Wish I could relate.
Me too.
Not something I've ever really gotten into. Okay. I think that's a good wrap-up point. Thank you for joining us today.